Hi, good morning, everybody. I was asked to introduce myself. I don't know if it's a little loud. I'm Yitzhak Breidowitz. I'm from Yerushalayim, and my wife and I have had the great success of living in Eretz Yisrael 3.5 years, I do a lot of different jobs, as anyone who lives in Eretz Yisrael has to, but my main job is with Or Sameach in Yerushalayim. I was a shul rav for around 25 years in America, and now I'm here. And Be'ezras Hashem, I hope the rest of my kehillah will follow as well. What I'm going to talk about today, I'm going to talk about something that maybe is not so dramatic, but it's extremely important. And that is the aspect of what Shabbos represents to us. And first, you know, we're leaving the month of Cheshvan. So I just want to mention something about Cheshvan and then connect Shabbos to Cheshvan and to think about this. And the truth is, what I'm going to say about Cheshvan applies to most of Kislev as well. And that is, you know, they tell the story about a Russian peasant in a Hasidic community in Russia. And he very much enjoyed the fact that Hasidim were always having a good time. They had Farbrengins in the middle of the week, and then Shabbos and Yom Tov, etc. So he decided he would become a Jew because he wanted to enjoy all of the Simchas. So he became a Jew, or at least he made believe he was a Jew, at a very auspicious time of year. It was around before Rosh Chodesh Shvat. So we had Rosh Chodesh Shvat, Gevaldika party, Tu B'Shvat, great party, Rosh Chodesh Adar, wonderful, Purim, wonderful, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, wonderful, Pesach, wonderful, thank you. And basically he was enjoying things. There were Shabbos in between and other parties in between, so wonderful thing. So he tells his friend, Ivan, that you got to become part of this religion because there are so many fun things that are always going on. So it took Ivan a little time till he managed to pass himself off as a Jew, but he did so, after Pesach, and then, of course, the problem basically was Sviras HaOmer, you know, no weddings, and then Tammuz in the 3 weeks and the 9 days, and restriction after restriction after restriction. All right, there was Shabbos, but still, even the Shabbosos were a bit muted, as it were. So he goes over to his friend and he says, listen, I thought you told me that this is a religion of parties and simchas, and why are there so many, you know, restrictions? So the first guy scratched his head and says, I don't know, ever since you joined, we've been going downhill. And of course, all of us know that in the Jewish calendar, we actually follow exactly what Kohelet says. Shlomo HaMelech, in his reflection upon life, says, Lakol Zman. There is a time in life for everything. There is a time of joy and a time of sadness. There is a time of speech, of song, and a time of crying, a time of talking and a time of being silent, a time of war and a time of peace. And that is the Jewish calendar. Times of jubilation, times of suffering, times of giving to others, times of focusing on ourselves, times of joyous expression, and times of somber mourning and crying. And what is interesting, though, is that this is not only true about the whole year, but this is true of the first 3 weeks of the month of Tishrei. Remember, it's already perhaps fading in the background, but remember the emotional roller coaster. Besides all the, of course, in Chutz Laaretz, they had 3 sets of 3-day Yom Tovs, Baruch Hashem, and Eretz Yisrael, we only have 1 set, Rosh Hashanah and Shabbos. But putting aside the difficulties of preparation and everything else, the food and everything else, but look at the emotions. We have the emotions of trepidation and fear. Who will live and who will die? We have the need to focus on tshuva. And then we have the unrestrained joy of Sukkot culminating in Simchas Torah. It's as if we're bipolar. We're going from one mood to another mood. How does one go? But the truth of the matter is they're all related. Rav Huttner used to say that the person who cannot rejoice on Simchas Torah cannot really cry on Tisha B'Av, and vice versa. Because why am I crying on Tisha B'Av? Because it is so painful for me to be distant from God. But if I'm not so happy in that relationship, then why do I feel so sad in the absence of that relationship? So only if you can cry because you feel far from Hashem when you think about Golus, do you feel the deep joy of being close to Hashem. He who does not feel that closeness cannot feel that absence. He who doesn't feel that sadness cannot feel that closeness. It's all connected. But on a deeper level, the question is, why does Hashem front-load it? Why does he put all of these conflicting emotions in such a small part of the year? Because Tishrei is the first month of the year. Tishrei is the template. It is the pattern for the year that we're going to have. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to experience the full palette of all human emotions so that we will be able to use those feelings to serve Hashem in the proper way. Because you see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want us to be automatons. Most of us have a central core to our personality, and we tend to always respond based on the way we are. You can have a joyous, outgoing person, and they tend to be joyous and outgoing. You can have an introspective, serious person. They tend to be introspective and serious. But Hashem says, no, I want the joyous person to learn how to be introspective. I want the introspective person to learn how to be joyous. Just as Avraham's chesed had to be counterbalanced with Sarah's gevura and Yitzchak's gevura had to be counterbalanced with Rivka's chesed, as we see in the Parshias of the week, so too within the human personality. Hashem does not want us to be automatic pilots. Even if we serve Hashem with good midos, we have good midos. But the concept is not simply to automatically respond. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to experience joy, wants us to experience introspection, wants us to experience fear and trepidation, wants us to experience love and jubilation. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to serve Him with all of the potentialities in the human soul, the kochos hanefesh, that make every human being an olam katan, a world, a universe. Olam is not just world, olam is universe in microcosm. And that is why it is front-loaded, so that in Tishrei, we go through the whole year in like speedy. What do they call it when you speed up the action? I forgot, that losing my English already. Fast forward, okay. That's what they say. They say when you come to Eretz Yisrael, you don't become bilingual, you become non-lingual, because you forget the English and don't learn the Hebrew. But okay, fast forward, that's right. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu fast forwards the entire year, so we experience everything. But after the month of Tishrei, we come to a dry spell, which is paradoxical, because Cheshvan is supposed to be the rainy month, although unfortunately we haven't had so much rain yet. And people say it's called Mar Cheshvan because it's the bitter month of Cheshvan because there are no Yamim Tovim. I just want to say that's probably just a drush because probably the reason it's called Mar Cheshvan is Mar in Biblical Hebrew refers to raindrops, so it's connected to rain, etc. But you know, the Belt says Mar Cheshvan, the bitter month of Cheshvan. And there are no Yamim Tovim. Right? It's a stretch. You know, Kislev has Chanukah. Teves has the end of Chanukah, Shvat has Tu B'Shvat, and Adar has Purim, and Nisan has Pesach. What does Iyar have? So it depends. If you're a Zionist, you have Yom HaTzmaut. If you're not a Zionist, you have Lag BaOmer, or Pesach Sheni, perhaps even. Sivan, we have Shavuos. Tammuz, what do you have? Actually, it's not so clear what you have in Tammuz. But interestingly enough, Chazal tell us, based on the Pasuk in Zechariah, that the fast days are going to become Yamim Tovim when Mashiach comes. So Yud Zayin Tammuz can be called a happy day in terms of what it will be. Same thing with Av. Number one, Av does have the 15th of Av, which was a very happy day. And number two, 9th of Av is the day Mashiach is born. Elul also doesn't have a Yom Tov, interestingly enough. But since we're coming up to all the Yamim Tovim, so Elul is a preparation. But Cheshvan is a dry spell. So I'd like to state with a little hyperbole, though, that although we're leaving Cheshvan, that in many ways Cheshvan might be the most important month of the year. Because Cheshvan is the test whether Yamim Tovim have really transformed us. Cheshvan is the test whether we can take the holiness of special moments and bring them into ordinary life. Because the goal of experiencing Kedusha is not to remain on the mountaintop. The goal of the Kohen Gadol going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim is not to stay in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but to come out and bring that Kedusha. The Chazon Ish used to give a beautiful mashal for this. He would say, if you see a pot, and the pot is on the fire, and it overflows,
you cannot tell if the pot is full or half empty. Because even a half empty pot is going to overflow when it's on the fire. The only way you could gauge how full a pot is when it's off the fire and it's no longer being boiled. If the water still sloshes over, you know it's full. The mashal is, when I leave the Yomim Tovim and I feel inspired and I feel energized, that doesn't mean there's something really in me. It's the excitement of the moment that has transformed me. I'm on the fire. When I'm on the fire, even if I'm mainly empty, I'm going to bubble over. But when I'm off the fire, and we're back to the challenge of the ordinary life, that is the real test. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I've shown you what you can become. I've shown you Madregos. I've shown you Kedusha. I've shown you His Orerus, arousing and awakening. Now, I'm going to put you into the world of carpools, and the world of diapers, and the world of shopping, and the world of cleaning, and the world of going to work. And let's see what you do with it. Because it's easy, relatively easy. I don't want to say it's never easy, but it's relatively easier to be holy when you're surrounded with holy time. And it's much more difficult to see the holiness in the ordinary, the holiness in the chol. Now, in fact, although I'm going a little off topic here, but I'll get back, I want to say that the Maharal tells us women have a special role and a special insight in being able to sanctify the mundane and the everyday, and to see the Kedusha in that which does not seem to be so sacred. The Maharal addresses this based on a thought that I know that you've heard at either your own Sheva Brachos or many other Sheva Brachos, your children, or many other Sheva Brachos, a very famous Gemara in Yevamos that points out Ish and Isha, right, share two common letters, Aleph and Shin, and the man has a Yud and the woman has a Hey, and Yud and Hey spell the name of Hashem, Ka. So what does the Gemara tell us? Again, you've heard this many times, that when Hashem is with a man and a woman, everything is wonderful. But if they take Hashem out of their lives, take out the Yud and the Hey, you have what is Eish, their selfishness, their egotism. They're looking after number one instead of focusing on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Each one is going to destroy the other and themselves in a fire of selfishness, right? Ish v'isha, shechina shiruya b'neihem, men are men, women are women, everyone is doing what they're supposed to be doing. Take out the yud and the hay. Eish! They destroy with machlokas, right? That's a Gemara. Beautiful Gemara. But the Maharal takes it to the next stage. Why does the man get the letter yud and the woman get the letter hey, of those two letters of Hashem's name? So the Maharal quotes another Gemara, and again I'm going to try to be makatsir here. The Maharal quotes another Gemara that says that Yud is the spiritual power through which Hashem created Olam Haba. Hey is the spiritual power through which Hashem created this world. Yud is Olam Haba, Hey is Olam Hazeh, and the Gemara says that's the meaning of the Pasuk, Ki Baka, Kaz Yud Hey, Ki Baka Hashem Tzur Olamim. With Ka, with Yud and Hey, Hashem created worlds, Ka. In other words, Yud is Olam Haba, Hey is Olam Hazeh. Now, why is that so? Why is Yud Olam Hazeh, Olam Haba, and Hey Olam Hazeh? So the Maharal says, Yud is the least physical of the letters, because it has the least space. It's a tiny little dot. So Yud represents pure spirituality, the world of Ruchnius, the world that is disembodied from physical existence. Olam Haba, where there's no eating, there's no drinking, there are no bodies. All there is the world of the neshama. What is hey? Maharal says hey is a composite letter. Dalit. And the left leg could be called a yud. Dalit represents pure materialism.
because we talk about matter as existing in four dimensions: length, width, height, and time. So Einstein didn't invent time-space or space-time. Maharal talked about it way before Einstein. The truth, Maharal didn't invent it either. I mean, it goes way back. Not only in Jewish sources, but again, even the non-Jewish sources, Aristotle recognized time as an aspect of matter. In other words, Olam Haba, you can't even talk about time. People say Olam Haba is forever. That's meaningless. In Ruchnius, there actually is no concept of time, per se. Time is linked to matter. So, here's what the Maharal says. If we accept the fact that Yud is Olam Haba because it's pure Ruchnius, and He is Dalet, which is pure materialism, and the Yud is the sanctification of that materialism to make it holy. So we understand Olam Haba equals Yud, Olam Hazeh equals He, because you're bringing the Yud into the Dalet, taking the material and sanctifying it. So now we understand why the man gets the Yud and the woman gets the He. Then, and again, these are generalizations, and I know that we always rebel against generalizations, but I'm talking about tendencies here. There will always be exceptions on all sides of here, sides of this. But men tend to be corrupted by their encounter with the world. The world brings out their testosterone, their competitiveness, their rivalry, their jealousies. So just as a person with emphysema has to go on 100% pure oxygen, men connect to Hashem by pure Yud activities. They go to the yeshivos. They go to the kolulim. They got to get away from the world. The world is going to drag them down. So a man gets a Yud. The Maharal says a woman's special koach is she can take the Yud and bring it into the Dalet. She can infuse the material world with Kedusha. Running a house, raising children, whatever the activities are. And indeed, the Maharal says, in this way, a woman is an ezer to a man in the sense that she educates the man that Kedusha is not only by escaping the demands of the real world, but by dealing with it, by being involved in the world. That's also an ezer kenegdei. Now, it's no accident that Yud is gematria of 10, and Hay is only half of that, because the truth of the matter is, when you're involved in pure Kedusha, so there's more ecstasy, there's more excitement, there's more geschmack, when you get involved in day-to-day activities. Right? I know that many women in particular talk about this. You know, many of you, I assume, have been to seminaries. You know, before you were married, you come to Eretz Yisrael Seminary, and you learn, you know, Ramban and Ramchal and all sorts of very, very deep ideas. And, you know, hopefully we can continue on some level, but we have to be honest. You know, one gets married, one has children. One does not always have, again, every case is different, one does not always have the opportunity for the type of pure intellectual and emotional learning that one had. And sometimes a person feels there's a yerida, I've gone down, I've gone from the yud to the hay. It's not as intense. It's not as powerful. It's not as moving. It's not as emotionally gripping. But the emes is, it's true that hay is less than yud in terms of its magnitude of passion.
But ultimately, that is the goal of Bria. The goal of Bria is not to be a malach. The goal of the Bria is to take the yud into the Dalet, and that's what Cheshvan is.
Tishrei itself might be the month of Yud, and Cheshvan is the month of Hay. So in that, although I didn't see a direct connection, but it could be Cheshvan B'dafka is connected to the Avodah of a woman, in which you take the Yud and you bring it into the mundane details of everyday life. Because that's the real test.
You know, there's a famous medrash that I think Chabad has made it famous because the Baal HaTanya quotes it. So in Chabad they say it over and over and over again. But it's a medrash; it's not a Chabad saying. And that is, it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ratzon to have a dira b'tachtonim. A dira b'tachtonim means a dwelling place in this low world. It is precisely in the lowliness of this world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to reveal Him.
in the mundane details of life, not by rejecting it and not by escaping it, but by confronting it, to bring the yud into the dalet, to make a hay, to make a dira, a dwelling place for Hashem,
a dira betachtayim. If you have Chabad friends, you'll hear this phrase, dira betachtayim, all the time. As they say, it is a medrash. It's that the Baal HaTanya happens to mention. Okay. So, in fact, let me just mention that there's the oldest Kabbalistic work we have is not the Zohar. The oldest Kabbalistic work we have is a book called Sefer Yetzira.
And Sefer Yetzira was either written by Avraham Avinu, or some say, it goes back to Adam HaRishon, right? So you can't get much earlier than that. And the Sefer Yetzira, and you can get an English translation, interestingly enough, Rav Arye Kaplan, Zichrono Livracha, translated Sefer Yetzira. And it shows how Hashem combined the different letters of the Aleph base to create the world. And the Gemara even tells us that that's how you make a golem, for example, that you can take these formulas and make a golem, although I wouldn't advise you to try it, because it can have some dangerous consequences.
And the Gemara even tells us that there were chachamim that would make a calf every Friday afternoon that they would shecht for Shabbos based on Sefer Yetzirah. There's even a Shaolin halacha, although it's largely theoretical, is a human created, actually it's a golem, it's a golem that is created by Sefer Yetzirah, can he be counted as a minion, you know, etc. If we're desperate, can we, you know, make a golem and the like.
Okay. But the part of Sefer Yetzirah I want to quote to you is not that, but it was one of the things Sefer Yetzirah does is, every month it connects to a letter of the Aleph Beis, sometimes more than one letter, and it connects to a chush, it connects to a sensory function. So in the month of Cheshvan, the pair is the following. In the month of Cheshvan, Hashem made the letter Nun, the Melech of Cheshvan, and he combined the letter Nun with the chush hareyach, the olfactory sense. So Cheshvan equals Nun plus smell. Nun and Reyach. And Sefer Yetzirah has a similar pairing for every month of the year, but it never explains why. It doesn't explain why, it just tells you this is it. So in Sifrei Chassidus, particularly Rav Tzadok, one of the things Rav Tzadok does in the Pre-Tzadok before every Rosh Chodesh is he takes the passage from Sefer Yetzirah and he tries to explain it. So this is what he says about Cheshvan. Why does Nun have the Shaychus to Cheshvan? Because Nun represents Nefila, falling down. You were on a high madrega and you fell down. Where do we see Nun is connected to Nefila? A famous Gemara in Brachos, right? Ashrei, which is Kapitel Kuf Memhei. Actually, the actual verse, Ashrei Yoshe Risachei, is not from Kuf Memhei. It's from an earlier Tehillim. Ashrei actually doesn't begin from Ashrei. Ashrei begins with Tehila L'David. Right? Ashrei is from somewhere else. But be it as it may, Tehila L'David, Kuf Memhei,
each pasuk begins with a letter of the Aleph Beis, a new letter of the Aleph Beis, except between mem, after mem, there's no nun. In other words, malchuscha, malchus kol olamim, umemshalcha b'chol dor v'dor, and then we skip, someich Hashem l'chol hanoflim.
There is no pasuk beginning with nun. So the Gemara in Brachos quotes Rav Yochanan, who says, why is there no nun in Ashrei? Because Nun represents Nefila, falling down, as it says in Amos about the Bnei Yisrael when they sin, Nafla, she has fallen, Laisaisif kum, she will not be able to get up again, Besulas Yisrael, a virgin of Israel. David HaMelech did not want to begin with Nefila, and that is why only in connection with Somech, Hashem supporting us, does it then say Somech Hashem l'chol hanoflim. But he doesn't want to begin with Nefila. By the way, even that very negative pasuk, Nafla Laisaisif Kum,
it all depends on your attitude. The Gemara says, right after it says that is a negative pasuk, Nafla, she has fallen, Laisaisif Kum, she will not get up again. The Gemara says that in Eretz Yisrael, they punctuated, right, so we have to be optimists. They punctuated the pasuk a different way. Instead of saying, Nafla, she has fallen, Laisaisif Kum, she won't get up again. Nafla Laisaisif, she will no longer fall. Kum, rise up. So it all depends on
That's a good message for life. It all depends on where you put your commas, you know, meaning to say the pasuk may be the same, but you can understand it in a positive way or a negative way, and your attitude determines the realities of what Hashem gives you. Psychologists call that phenomenon reframing. Right? The frame can change how the picture looks. What part of the picture you want to frame, what part you don't want to frame, you know, etc. Okay.
But Rav Tzedek says, if we understand that Nun is symbolic of Nafila, so we understand why Cheshvan is connected to the letter Nun. It's a big fall.
We've fallen from the height of the Yomim Tovim to everyday life. Ah, so what's the connection to Reyach? So those of you that are very literary might have read, or at least heard or seen, the great 2,000-page novel of Marcel Proust, Remembrance of Things Past, which is a huge, huge, huge monster of a novel, but it begins with memories being triggered by Reyach. A smell brings back a memory, which then goes on for like 2,000 pages. But what is Reyach? Reyach is what lingers when the mamushas is gone. Right? Let's say you had a barbecue or you had some delicious food, and the food is all eaten up, but even after the food is gone, there's a reyach for a while that can remind you of it. So Cheshvan doesn't have the mamushas of a Yom Tov, but spiritually the reyach is still here. So the same way if you faint, you need smelling salts. So when we feel in nefila, we need to remember the reyach of the Yomim Tovim to revive us, right? So the reyach is like the smelling salt of the Yom Tov that still carries through. Again, in Ruchnius, in a spiritual way, Cheshvan lives up the reyach of the Yomim Tovim, and that is the antidote for nefila. So yes, it's a zman of nefila, but the chush ha-reyach spiritually is going to be musta. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Right, right. The Besamim restore, or at least revive you from the loss of the Neshama Yisera, because spiritually it's a way of holding on to the Shabbos. In fact, Chazal identify Reyach as the thing that is most closely connected to the Neshama, because it's the least physical, right?
When you eat, when you taste, you know, there's a physical connection. Reyach is a very spiritual connection. Now, this is a long introduction because I didn't begin my topic yet.
Okay, let me see. I have other sessions. I can overlap things and mix them. But the statement that we see or assume is axiomatic, that Cheshvan doesn't have special times. It's just ordinary life. So number one, the lesson is, of course, ordinary life is special. We say in Shemona Esrei, Al Nisecha Shebechol Yom Imanu. That's a very important line. We thank Hashem for the miracles that are with us every single day. It's a simple thought, but it's a thought that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to think about at least three times a day. Every day is a miracle. Every moment is a miracle. To breathe, to walk.
Why do we say brachos on everything? Because when you pick up a glass of water and you're thirsty, in the hot Beit Shemesh sun, your slime isn't quite as hot. Right, you think, Baruch Hashem, Hashem gave me water, fruit. Person goes to the bathroom. Make sure yatzar. Kids like to joke about that bracha, but I read an article by a urologist, who says after he's seen his patients over so many years, he understands what that bracha means. Right? The concept is to appreciate, to be grateful. You know, we're sometimes we live in a world where if something doesn't go exactly the way we want it to go, you know, we tend to complain. We tend to feel, you know, and yet we don't look at the fact that, you know, 99.9999% we get what we want. So part of the lesson, of course, is that there's no such thing as ordinary life. There's no such thing as non-sacred time. But in truth, Cheshvan does have holy time, even without coming to that idea. And that is, of course, the holiest time of all. And that is the holiness of Shabbos. Now, we take Shabbos for granted, maybe, because it comes so often. Another Shabbos. But Shabbos, in fact, it's an interesting discussion. Shabbos is, of course, holier than any Yom Tov, that's for sure. The interesting question is, we could debate this.
What is a holier day, Shabbos or Yom Kippur? Of course, this year, no question, because Shabbos was on Yom Kippur, so it was all the same. But so let me just throw out to you that
there's a little bit of a contradiction. What is higher in the Madrega of holiness? There are at least two proofs that the holiness of Shabbos is greater than the holiness of Yom Kippur. One proof is the number of aliyos to the Torah. On Shabbos, we have 7 people called to the Torah, not counting Mafkir. Yom Kippur is 6. Rosh Hashanah, Yomim Tovim is 5. Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed is 4. And on a regular Monday and Thursday is 3. So it seems to be logical that the number of aliyos corresponds to the sanctity of a day. So that would indicate Shabbos is higher. It has 7. Yom Kippur only has 6. Right? That's one thing. Another proof is, if I violate Shabbos, I do malacha on Shabbos, if there are witnesses, I can be executed in a beis din. I'm chayav misa bidei adam. If I violate Yom Kippur by either eating or by doing malacha, I am not chayav misa in a beis din. Once again, that indicates a difference in severity of punishment. The counter-argument is, of course, that Yom Kippur is called in the Torah
Shabbos Shabbason, the Shabbos of Shabboses. So there's a discussion, actually some say Shabbos of Shabbos does not refer to holiness, it just means, Shabbos means to refrain. So on a regular Shabbos, I refrain from work, but I'm allowed to eat. Yom Kippur is the refraining of the refraining, because not only do I refrain from work, I have to refrain from eating. But it's not a statement about Kedusha. But be it as it may, the only debate you'll have is Shabbos vis-a-vis Yom Kippur. But Shabbos vis-a-vis Yom Tov, there is absolutely no question. Shabbos is a holier zman than Yom Tov. And what does Shabbos give us? So Chazal tell us, Shabbos gives us what is called a neshama yisera, an extra soul. Now, what does that mean exactly? So Rashi in Maseches Beis says an amazing thing, a bit strange. Rashi says, this is why on Shabbos you can eat and drink more than you eat during the week, because since you have an extra soul, you're eating for two. Now, of course, when the extra soul leaves at the end of Shabbos, it does not take the calories with it. So it's kind of unfair. You're being saddled with
everything that extra soul ate. But the other question is, well, isn't that a bit of a triviality? I mean, to say that the concept of the neshama yisera is that I can eat more food. Yeah, there's a mitzvah, of course, to honor Shabbos, but one would not associate that that's what it is. So I would like to suggest an alternative explanation in Rashi. And that is, when Rashi talks about food, eating and drinking, Rashi is not talking about physical food. Rashi is talking about food of the soul. And we find the Torah calls the soul being connected to Hashem as food. It says by Matan Torah, that they gazed at the Shekhinah, vayochlu vayishtu, and they ate and they drank. And the Rambam says in the Mor Nevuchim that eating and drinking meant they were nana miziv ha-Shekhinah. So soul food does not mean, as it would mean in Harlem, collard greens and watermelon and fried chicken, but rather soul food means the ability to feel Hashem. And as a result, I would also suggest this, a different translation a tiny bit. Instead of neshama yesera as an extra soul, we could translate neshama yesera as an enhanced and an enlarged soul. So it's not that you get another soul, but your soul gets enlarged and enhanced by the capacity to feel closeness to Hashem. Now, it's important to say, and this is not the happiest thought, that these refer to capacities and potentialities. They do not necessarily refer to actualization. In other words, in Ruchnius, there are no free gifts, so to speak. No free lunch, as an economist would say. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, every Shabbos, gives us the capacity to experience. But whether we actually are able to experience depends on us. The famous statement that countless women have said and heard, only the person who prepares on Erev Shabbos will be able to eat on Shabbos, that applies to soul food as well. In other words, you prepare on Erev Shabbos or before, and then you're able to eat. The Neshama Yisrael, you're able to experience the extra Ruchnias on Shabbos. So a person has to think, and again, you know, it's brought down in many Sfarim that, you know, we all know that Friday afternoon is a very tense time in a lot of homes, because you got to get ready for Shabbos, you know. And it's funny, when Shabbos is in the summer and it's, you know, 7 or 7.30, you know, we're running behind schedule. And when Shabbos is in the winter, 3.30, you know, we're also, you know, it's, like, it's funny. If in the winter I'm able to be totally ready for Shabbos by 3:45, then why can't I be ready for Shabbos in the summer at 3:45? But no, everything's last minute. But Teva, we're all, you know, many last minute people. But it's brought down in Svarim that because the potential of the holiness of Shabbos is so, so great, the Yetzer Hara works overtime to create machlokes and tension so that we won't be able to fully experience. Baruch Hashem, the Yetzer Hara is very rarely totally successful. Baruch Hashem, we can experience the joy of Shabbos even when there were tensions. But the point is, if we could manage to enter Shabbos in a spirit of shalom, right, the Yetzer Hara would be totally defeated. And the Yetzer Hara B'dafka, sometimes it's a very important point. Tensions are highest in life when the potential for holiness is at its greatest. Because the Yetzer Hara has to come and be mekalkel in various ways. So that's why I know that, you know, many women have minhagim. There are different campaigns to have the table set Thursday night or Friday morning. It creates a Shabbos-tika atmosphere throughout the day, or to be makabel Shabbos early. You know, each person has to look at their schedules, obviously. Baruch Hashem, one of the milas of Eretz Yisrael, of which there are many, you know, Rav Soloveitchik used to say about America. He used to say about America that in Europe there were Shabbos Yidden who kept Shabbos, and in America there were Shabbos Yidden, Baruch Hashem, although not as many. But he said, in Europe there were also something called an Erev Shabbos Yid, and in America there were no Erev Shabbos Yid. What does that mean? A Jew in America, you know, you would keep Shabbos. But, you know, it's always last-minute stuff. You get home from work, you know, 2 minutes before, and like, you know, Clark Kent, you know, changing into Superman, etc. We change 5 minutes before Shabbos. But most of Erev Shabbos was a regular work day. In Eretz Yisrael, I think you do have more of a chush, more of a sense of Erev Shabbos being a preparation, even Thursday night, right? I know I live in Malo Dafna, you know, Gula, Meisharim, you see the idea that already Thursday night, just people are already, you know, there's like a Shabbos atmosphere in the air. So Baruch Hashem that we have. But the more that one can prepare spiritually to receive Shabbos in a state of serenity, menucha sanefesh, calmness. The Rambam's Lashon and Hilchos Shabbos is that the way you honor the Shabbos is you're yoshev u'mitzapeh. You're sitting and eagerly waiting. In other words, it's not like you have things to do the last minute. You know, everything's finished, and you're waiting, as if, you know, Lahavdil, the president or the queen of England is coming to the house. You know, Lahavdil is much greater. And you're just waiting. Everybody's waiting and excited. That is kind of the atmosphere of what a Shabbos is like. The Rambam's Lashon again is Yoshev u'mitzape. Sit and wait. You're there ready, you know, to learn, say Tehillim, Shir HaShirim, in a relaxed, serene frame of mind to welcome this tremendous gift that Hashem is giving us. Now, what I wanted to share with you, what time it is, I didn't run out of time already. A second. Yeah. Okay. So the title of the talk, again, I apologize for not getting it till the end, and I may have to carry it over, is The Three Faces of Shabbos. And the reason I wanted to talk about this is it's based on the fact that in the Tefillah Shabbos, there is something very unique that no other Yom Tov has at all. That is, in every other Yom Tov, including Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the davening for Ma'ariv, the Shmon Esrei, for Ma'ariv, Shachris, and Mincha is always the same. You know, Musaf may be different. Right? Shachris, Mincha, Ma'ariv is always the same. The only Shmona Esrei, of course during the week that's obviously the case, the only Shmona Esrei where the middle bracha, which is the bracha of the holiness of the day, switches between Ma'ariv, Shachris, and Mincha, is Shabbos. Friday night, it begins Ataki Dashta, you sanctified Shabbos, and we read the Parsha Vayechulu HaShemayim, that the world was created in 6 days. Shabbos morning, Yismach Moshe. Moshe rejoices in bringing down the Luchos, and we read V'shamru b'nei Yisrael es haShabbos. Mincha, atoy echad v'shimcha echad, you are one. Now, the second paragraph, Ritzei b'mnuchaseinu, that is the same for all three tefillas. But even then, there's a difference that's worthy of some note. And that is, Friday night, Shabbos is referred to in the feminine, v'yanuchu v'a, we will rest in her. Shabbos morning, v'yanuchu v'o, we will rest in him. I mean, you know, we translated it, but it is a masculine word. And mincha, v'yanuchu them, we will rest in them. Shabbos is a plural. So it's very notable that the beginning paragraph is a totally different paragraph in Shachris, in Maariv Shachris Mincha, and in addition, in the concluding paragraph, which is the same nusach, Ritzei b'mnuchaseinu, accept our rest and Baruch Atah Hashem Mekadesh Shabbos, even though that is 99% the same, but we do have the ba, bo, bum difference. Although Maitre Yaakov Emden claims that all of that was a mistake. He claims there were three different nuschos. One nusach said ba all three, and one nusach said bo all three, and one nusach said bum all three, and the printers just arbitrarily assigned this to that. That's Rabbi Yaakov Emden. And yet, most Siddurim don't say that. Most Siddurim do have a distinct nusach. So this is what one might term the three faces of Shabbos. The Torah tells us that the three prayers of Shabbos correspond to three pivotal Shabboses in our history, and one is in our future. The first Shabbos is Brias HaOlam. Hashem made the world in 6 days, and he rested on Shabbos. So the theme of Friday night is the Shabbos of creation. That's why the paragraph we read is Vayechulu. The next great Shabbos was the Shabbos of Matan Torah. Chazal tell us in Masechet Shabbos that we have a Kabbalah, a Masorah, that the Aseres Hadibros were given on Shabbos. So that is why the theme of Shabbos day is revelation. So the theme of Friday night is creation. The theme of Shabbos day is revelation, Matan Torah, Moshe bringing the Luchos. The third Shabbos is the Shabbos we have not experienced yet, and that refers to the days of Mashiach and later Olam Haba, which are called Yom Shekulo Shabbos, the day of the eternal Shabbos. That is the time of redemption. So you're going through a progression. The Shabbos of creation, the Shabbos of revelation, the Shabbos of redemption. And that is why we talk about Hashem being one, because in this world we perceive sometimes Hashem as Midas Adin and sometimes as Rachamim. But Bayom Ahu, on the day of Geula, Yiyah Hashem Echad, Ushmo Echad, God will be acknowledged as one, and we will see oneness in Hashem's Hanhaga, that even that which looks like punishment and din is Rachamim. That's right? Okay. This is what the Torah says. You're going through a process. Creation, revelation, and redemption. So what I just want to add to the Torah is a little bit of a frosting on top of the Torah, and that is, these three stages are not simply historic. I mean, I'm not just thinking about creation, revelation, and then thinking about Mashiach. But they are also individual transitions that occur to a person every single Shabbos. Every single Shabbos, we go through a creation stage, a revelation stage, and ultimately, hopefully, a redemption stage. How does that work? The first and most basic thing that happens on Shabbos, again, ideally, is a person feels they are recreated, they are reborn. When it says in the Torah, Sheshes Yamim Tase Melachtecha, 6 days you shall do your work. Now, countless parents have, when they try to get their kids out of kolo, told them, there's a mitzvah, 6 days you have to work. Okay. I'm not going to get into that debate, which unfortunately in Eretz Yisrael right now is a quite difficult debate. But Chazal have a different take on it. Although work is a good thing, I'm not taking that away. Of course, Amelus Batara is plenty hard work. But okay. But Chazal say Sheish Yesh Yamim Tasa Melachtecha is not so much telling you you have to work. It's a psychological statement that when Shabbos comes, in your mind it should be as if all your work is finished. Now, Lemaisa, we know how hard that is. No one's ever entered a Shabbos with, you know, having no responsibilities for the next week. But it should be, you're reborn. You're like a newborn child. You have no responsibilities. That is actually why it's almost a law of nature that men, particularly men, I guess everybody, is so extremely tired Friday night. Because the whole week you're running on adrenaline. And Shabbos, when you let go, you know, you're free, a newborn baby, a child, no responsibilities. Hermann Welt, famous novelist, who's a Shomer Shabbos, Baruch Hashem, he's in his 90s, he actually writes about this. He wrote a book, This Is My God, which is a nice book about, it's an introduction to Judaism. It was written a long time ago, but it's still a very good book. And he says that he produced a Broadway play. His first one of his novels was being produced as a Broadway play. And it was, you know, they were working 18 hours a day on this. Imagine a Broadway play. I don't know what's involved, but apparently quite a lot is involved. And it was going to open on Broadway Saturday night. So around 1 o'clock in the afternoon of Friday, the day before the play is going to open, he says to his co-producers, okay, see you later. So the producer figured he was going out for a cup of coffee. So he says, okay, but be back in 15 minutes. We can't waste time. You can't, as he said, you can't have a regular lunch break. You know, just come back in 15 minutes. He says, you don't understand. I'm not leaving for 15 minutes. I'm leaving for 28 hours. So he says, the guy looked at him. Your play is opening up on Broadway tomorrow night, and you're going to show up like a half an hour before opening, or maybe even miss the opening? And Hermann Welk says, the guy looked at me as if I was absolutely nuts, as if I was from Mars. And I also said, gee, why am I doing this crazy thing? And then I realized, you know, that's exactly what Shabbos is. It hit him what Shabbos was. You just say no. You let go. Unless it is a matter of life and death, mamish. And this is not figurative. You know, someone might say, this play is a matter of life and death. You know, we use that expression all the time. No, unless you can save somebody's life, you'll let go. So that's stage number one. I'm reborn. I'm recreated. I'm freed. I'm liberated. And that is why Shabbos Friday night is called Mother. It is the mother that gives birth to me. I am free from my past life. That's a wonderful feeling. But ze lo maspik. It's not enough to be freed from the burdens of your life. Freedom is not a purpose. Freedom is not a goal. Freedom is an enabler to enable you to achieve a goal. What's the goal? So the same way Pesach has to be linked to Shavuos by the counting of the Omer, because freedom without Torah is worthless, so too the Shabbos of creation must be mechubar to the Shabbos of Matan Torah, in which I take my freedom, I take my menuchas hanefesh, I take my serenity, and I pledge myself to do the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to learn His Torah, to follow His Torah, to do His mitzvahs. In other words, it's exactly the same kesher as Pesach to Shavuos is Friday night to Shabbos morning. So we move from Shabbos as liberating me to Shabbos as giving me direction. Now, Tagore, a famous Indian poet who won the Nobel Prize for Literature around World War I, once gave a beautiful, beautiful metaphor, and of course he wasn't speaking about Judaism at all. He said, a human soul is like a violin string that can produce music. Paradoxically, when the string is totally loose. Imagine you have a violin string on a table. It's free! Can you produce music with a string that is not tied down? No. Only when it's tied down, it's disciplined, it's structured, is the music within able to be revealed. Freedom has a value, and it has a tremendous gift and a tremendous value, only when it's coupled to Kabbalah's O Malchus HaShemayim. Right? Now, that is why Shabbos in the daytime is no longer the mother that gives birth to the baby and nurses the baby. It's kind of Abba, the strict father, the disciplinarian. Of course, I understand in many houses the roles might be reversed. I understand that. But in classical halacha, it is the father that is the one who teaches the child Torah. And therefore, when Shabbos is connecting me to Revelation, Shabbos becomes masculine. Okay. What's left? Redemption. What is redemption? Of course, we talk about Am Yisrael needing Geula. But the truth is, Golus is also a state of our soul. We are separated from Hashem. We are separated from each other by Sinas Chinam. And I don't think any of us needs a reminder that the Machla of Sinas Chinam is alive and well, unfortunately, in the 21st century, in almost 2,000 years after the Korban. And we had some recent elections that reminded us of that. So, Golus is Pirud, separation. Separation from Hashem. Separation from each other. And on a deeper level, separation from within ourselves. Our heart and our feelings don't match up with our mind. Our mind knows what we're supposed to do in life. Our mind knows how we're supposed to behave and what Hashem wants of us. And we try to do it. But often we can't get the emotions to be in sync with the mind. Now, Baruch Hashem, if a person does mitzvahs, even without feeling, it's a tremendous avodah. Hashem gives tremendous reward. In some ways, a person who does something without the feeling is doing a tremendous thing, that we try to do the right thing, even if we don't feel. So chas v'shalom. It's a madrega, it's a great madrega. But it does mean we're in a state of gullus, because our hearts and our minds are not working together. There's a certain idea, they call it in modern psychology, you're in the zone. And we have moments like that. There are times in which you're just in the flow of things. There's a certain naturalness in what you're doing. You feel you're in the right place, you're doing the right thing. We don't have those moments all the time. And sometimes we don't have them most of the time. But there are moments in which there's a coordination. And the idea of being in the zone is the mind and the heart are all working together. Right? That occurs when you even forget how much time, right? When you can be doing something that you really enjoy, you're engrossed in, you didn't even notice, 5 hours went by. Because you were so connected to what you were doing. But most of the time, we live in a fragmented, disjointed life, and I'm pulled in different ways. So when Mincha talks about redemption, it's not just talking about Mashiach, although it is, but it's also talking about achieving Achdus with Hashem, Ato Echad, Achdus with our fellow Jews, to be Mesakin Sinas Chinam, and Achdus within ourselves, so that our emotions and our mind are all working in the same way. They say, again, this is a mimer that's been said in many, many people's names. They say B'Shem Rav Nachman of Breslov, they say Rav Yisrael Salanter. So you should know, when something is said both in the name of a great Hasidic Rebbe and a great Misnagdash Gadol, it must be true, because both sides are claiming this as a truth, right? So they both agree on this. And that is, the greatest distance in the world is between the head and the heart. And that is why the theme is Achdus. And that is why Shabbos is plural, because it represents at that point the melding of the Lev and the Malach. And by the way, Revolba speaks very beautifully in something that is often not discussed. Revolba has a kuntras on marriage for chassanim. So although women aren't supposed to see this one, right, they have these kuntras for women, for men, but I will violate a little bit, just share one thought about this. Revolba says that a ben Torah spends many, many years cultivating the life of the mind. The life of the mind, intellect. And certainly if you're not a Hasidish person, if you're a Litvish person, there's almost a disparagement of the world of emotion and feeling. Kind of, you know, it gets you nervous. And yet Revolba says, it is the shlemus of a person that they develop their capacity to feel as deeply as they develop their capacity to think. Because otherwise, you're kind of impaired. You're emotionally crippled in some ways when you only have a brain and you don't have a heart. What was the character of the Wizard of Oz? Was it, I remember? Who did not a brain, not a heart, not a heart, not a brain. Well, it's exactly, you know, this is a muscle for these ideas. And there Revolba says that, again, this is a stereotype because there are differences, but, you know, the woman may come more from the world of Regesh, the man may come more from the world of thoughts, but it's necessary for each one, as I said before, each one to take in the qualities of the other. That the man must develop the quality of Regesh, the woman must develop the quality of Machshava, and together they can then achieve a Shlemus, and this is the redemption of Shabbos. So, there's a wondrous transformation that every Shabbos can give us. Freedom and liberation. Renewed commitment and strength. And then inner redemption. And Nebuch, so by the time you've accomplished this, Shabbos is leaving. You want to hold on to it a little more. That is why, of course, the Nigunim of Suda Shalishis are normally kind of yearning, pining. I want to hold on a little bit more. But once again, just like Cheshvan, the test of a Yom Tov is taking it into ordinary life. The test of a Shabbos is also your ability to bring it into ordinary life. But Baruch Hashem, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday is still living off the Reyach of Shabbos. And Wednesday, Thursday, Friday is already getting the advanced Reyach of Shabbos. That's why according to Halacha, if you missed Havdalah Saturday night, you can still make Havdalah until sunset on Tuesday because it's still connected to the old Shabbos. And Hashem never lets you go without some hashpah of Shabbos in the world. So, Bezus Hashem, I think we should all try very much to recognize the great matana that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us, not to take it for granted, to use it in a way that creates joy, simcha, closeness to Hashem, emotional renewal, to make it very, very special. And the truth of the matter is that what children will remember all of their lives, are the Shabboses that were at their parents' house. And that'll be the template for what they're going to do, etc. And, you know, this will have an impact that will go l'dorei doros. And women have an enormously important part of that. So Be'ezos Hashem, may all of you, may all of us be zocha to experience Hashem's matana. So, thank you.